still discussing damages. And I guess the two things we'll take up now, I think we touched on it, but we did it a number of weeks ago already, so maybe we'll just review. Let me shut up the volume here. All right, sound is still good?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're clear.
Great. Okay, so we're talking about the difference between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon regarding contributive damages. So, again, I don't recall if we did this or not, but one thing I definitely want to do is define the argument between them. Because, again, Rabbi Meir is the one that says, and I believe we hold by him too, that even if a person is just contributed, and it contributed to a damage, the case of the guy throwing the vase off the roof, but he was going to throw it onto you know, a mattress, and somebody else moves the mattress away, so the guy on the roof would still be obligated to pay. Interesting is that if the guy who moved it away was like a third party, so they probably have to split. If the vase was $100, so each would pay 50 to the owner. But if it was the owner that moved away the mattress, so then the guy who threw it off the roof would have to pay 100. It's a bit counterintuitive because here the owner is moving the mattress, but the truth is he can move the mattress. There's no law preventing him from doing that. And he, of course, owns it, so he doesn't have to pay himself. That doesn't make sense. So the only person who was negligent to get somebody else's property was the guy on the roof throwing it off. But there, you know, Rabbi Meir is the one that says that the guy on the roof is going to be obligated, whereas Rabbi Shimon and the others will not. Rabbi Shimon says you got to take the vase and destroy it yourself. Okay, so we have to define what the argument is between the two of them. And then secondly, if we step back, what the very concept is in terms of the secondary case where, did we talk about the case where a person burns up a document of somebody else, like a will?
No, I don't believe we did.
Okay, good. I was wondering whether, I don't like repeating, you know, material, but it's very, very interesting. The case is a very simple fact. Is that, let's say, I don't want to pick on Doug anymore. I keep on using him as the culprit. Let's pick on Cal. So Cal, well, let's cover all bases. Let's say it's Cal and Jim. They both have a document that entitles them. Let's say you win in halves on you know, the lottery. So out here in New York now, it's a whole big thing. It's almost $200 million for the lottery if you win it, I think Tuesday night. So people come out of the woodwork. So let's say, you know, Cal and Jim buy a ticket, and lo and behold, you have the winning number. I come along and I burn up that ticket. So in that case, Rabbi Meir would surely say that I have to pay you back because I contributed in some fashion, right? I mean, I played some role, no matter what, I played some role in you not having, you know, loss of money, right? Whereas Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion, you have to do, it's not sufficient that you just burn a ticket. For example, he would say in a case where you have a vase, and I go over to your vase and I destroy it with my hands, so the whole world agrees, I'm obligated to pay. You know. So let's take the first case. Before we get to, I think we need the first answer before we can move to the second question. Because that really lays the groundwork.
Sorry, that conference number was not recognized. Please re-enter your conference number followed by the pound sign.
Everybody there? Hello?
If you are the mom.
Hello?
Thank you.
looks like the snowy weather has got us.
Snowclad quarters.
Hello?
Snowclad.
All right, we're going to have to hold on to try to get back online for those listening to the recording version of this class. We're going to just pause it for a second until we get back online. Right now, I'm still reading from Nachmanides, his specific letter on causative damages.
Right.
Okay. All right. So, what I wanted to do again is to clarify. We first have to go into the debate between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon. And then we could answer the secondary question regarding a specific case of burning up a lottery ticket. Let's say with Cal and Jim, we're owners, and I destroyed the ticket. So what would the two rabbis say on that? So let's go to the first point. The first point is that what is the difference, or what is the definition behind Rabbi Meir, that he says that even if I'm the guy on the roof throwing off the vase, and I'm not the sole cause of the damage because somebody else had to move the mattress away. Nonetheless, Rabbi Meir says that I'm obligated. I have to pay. Whereas Rabbi Shimon says, no, it's not, I don't have to pay unless I take the vase myself and destroy it. Just throwing it off the roof that was going towards the mattress was not going to be, it would not have destroyed it on its own. So we have to define what the theory is of each rabbi in terms of what causes one to be culpable in terms of damages. All right, question is clear?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, Jim?
I'm sorry, I sound like I lost everybody there.
Oh, you didn't hear the question?
I think I heard the question, and I just went blank for a few seconds.
Yeah, I think we were all just pondering it. That was the pondering moment. One day they'll have telephones where you'll have like a little video screen, and you can see like a little cloud over a person's head so you can know what's going on if they're just thinking. But it takes some thought because, again, Rabbi Meir is holding a person culpable even though he wasn't the sole cause, whereas Rabbi Shimon is saying, no, you have to be the sole cause. But what's the theory? What's their formulation of the law according to each rabbi in terms of how does one become culpable for damages? What's required? That, I would say, is the question we have to answer.
So, seems like Rabbi Meir is taking the position that if you have, he seems to be taking a responsibility position, versus Rabbi Shimon seems to be taking a causative position. In that Rabbi Meir, if I'm understanding the case right, is saying if you have a responsibility over the item or possession of it, and something happens to it, you're responsible. Even if the something is, say, not your direct fault or not your direct cause or whatever. Whereas Rabbi Shimon seems to be saying, no, if someone else or something else maybe is responsible, then you're not held culpable. That a possible distinction.
Right. First, could you get closer to the phone? I heard what you said. It was just a little bit low.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. No problem. Yeah, you're saying that it sounds like it's a repetition of the facts, though. It doesn't sound like we're making an inroad, because you're saying that contributive. According to Rabbi Meir, that's the contributive role. Just a contributing role would be sufficient to make one liable. And you'd say, according to Rabbi Shimon, that you have to be the sole cause. Is that, that's what you're saying, right?
Right.
But I believe that is, those are the facts, actually.
Okay.
You have to go beyond the facts and see, in terms of the halacha, what the formulation is. In terms of how is what's required for one to be liable. Sir, maybe we'll take Rabbi Shimon first. I mean, he's saying that even if I contributed, that's not sufficient. Because why? What does he require? What does actually being the sole cause indicate in terms of liability?
So you're looking for something beyond the fact that Rabbi Shimon is saying he has to be the sole cause.
Yeah, because that's just the facts, but he has to have a theory that would demand that to be true. Because he has a certain theory of how laws of liability are incurred upon somebody.
Okay, I see the question.
Yeah.
By the way, can you hear me clearly now?
Yes, very well, thank you.
Redefining that, that doesn't come out just redefining the facts.
Yeah, it's not an easy one. let me put it this way. According to Rabbi Meir, if I'm throwing the vase off the roof, well, even according to Rabbi Shimon, if I throw the vase off the roof and I'm heading, you know, towards a whole area that's full of mattresses, what could you say about the act that I did?
Oh, there was no intention. But that wouldn't hold, because if you were the sole cause, even if it was by accident, you'd be held responsible.
That's right.
I was doing something that put the merchandise in jeopardy.
Did you do an act of breaking the... Was that an act of breaking? Was that an act of destruction when you threw it off the roof?
There's a difference between breaking and destruction?
No.
Oh.
We use the word breaking. So was it an act of breaking when I tossed it off the roof?
No.
Okay. That's why Rabbi Shimon says you're not liable. Because in halakhic framework, there's a definition of your action. What was the act that you did? Did you do an act of breaking? You didn't. Therefore, Rabbi Shimon says you're not liable. In order to be liable, your action has to be defined as a destructive act. And it wasn't. When I tossed it, it was not a destructive act. Subsequently, something happened that teamed up with my non-destructive act and created destruction. But my act was not a destructive act. And Rabbi Meir will agree, because in terms of the facts, they have to agree what the facts are. So Rabbi Shimon says, in order to be liable, you must do an act of destruction. That's why it explains what you were saying earlier, that you have to be the soul. Yes, but what is being the sole cause of the damage? What it means, ipso facto, is that you did an act of destruction. That's how the Torah measures liability in terms of a person's actions. What was your act construed as a destructive act or not? That's why the cases where you have my field is growing into yours. I didn't do any act of destruction, so the Rabbi Shimon says it doesn't matter that it ends up to be a crossbred species, which is prohibited. Remember that case we did 2 weeks ago?
Right.
Right, so there, again, Rabbi Shimon would say, I'm not liable. I didn't do any destructive act. Now, we'll have to see. Let me just see what it says over there. Who's the one held liable? In that case, right. Let me just see here the notes that Rabbi Nachmanides says earlier. Yeah, that was the rebuttal. That wasn't Rabbi Shimon in that case. Because in the case of the crossbred species, so you have an obligation to prevent it from happening. So that we had the case where if the guy intended to, if he didn't intend to take care of it, and then it happens, so then he's culpable. Because in that case, we said that there are certain cases in the Torah where intent is vital to liability. But if the guy had intent to go and put up a fence, but then he broke his leg and he couldn't get out there in time to stop the crossbreeding of the two species, so then he would not be liable, because crossbreeding is not the prohibition per se. For example, we said if you have two species growing in the wild and they crossbreed, there's no prohibition on them. And nothing was done because it's not the intermingling per se. It's the fact that a person was lax in terms of preventing the prohibition. Right, so that's where intent comes into the picture. But we remain with our case. So Rabbi Shimon clearly states that if you did not have a person doing an act of destruction, you can't hold them liable. Whereas Rabbi Meir says it doesn't matter. He says that you don't have to do an act, right? As long as you were involved somehow. So maybe you want to try to define that side now. Now that you know Rabbi Shimon, how would you define Rabbi Meir, who does find the person liable, even if he was not the only party involved in the damage?
So here we're talking about really defining the concept of contributive, right?
Yes. And again, you want to answer the question, what is Rabbi Meir's view of liability in terms of damages? What's required of a person in order to be liable?
I would think it is induced.
Was that?
Well, we're musing here about whether intent is involved.
I think you said before well that if even negligence, a person is going to be obligated.
Well, it seems like a person would have to have had some role person tosses a vase down to me and I'm supposed to catch it. And I just turn away at that moment. I haven't touched the vase, but it seems like I'm contributive. So it seems like you can be contributive without ever handling the object.
Well, that's a very good question. That's a good question. You mean I'm throwing it off the roof and you're going to catch it, but then you turn away.
Right, or you throw it off the roof, as I said, I'll have a mattress waiting for it, and then I don't put the mattress where it should be. I didn't touch the vase, but it seems like I'm contributing.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be like a case where the mattress was there, and then you push it away.
Yeah.
So in both cases, your act of pushing it away, I can understand that you're going to be contributive. But let's say you don't do anything. Let's say you just say, yeah, you're going to catch it, but then you decide not to.
Right.
So now there's no action you did at all. I understand moving the mattress away is an action. But what can you say about the case where you refuse to catch it? So you did no action where you just stood there. There was inaction. Can you say that you're culpable?
I think you could, because you failed to do an action that you said you would that was causative to the vase breaking.
Yeah, but you didn't do anything. The question is whether you require some sort of an action in that case. In order to hold the person culpable, well, maybe it's all my fault. I threw it off, and I shouldn't have trusted that you're going to catch it. I don't care what you said. there's always that possibility that you're not going to.
Well, what if I, to take a more extreme case, I assure everyone that I will have the elevator in the hotel fixed to operate safely by 9 a.m. tomorrow. And at 9 a.m. tomorrow, they'll get in it and it crashes and they'll die. And I didn't follow through with what I said. I realize I'm operating from a sense of rightness or wrongness here as opposed to a clear definition.
So you want to know if your inactivity... Yeah, you'd be obligated in that case. We have a principle that if a person digs a pit in the public wayfair, he's obligated to damages for people or animals that fall into it.
Ah, okay.
So there, you already, the fact that you had, it was your property, so that the Torah looks at as being a, it's like you've got a pit in the public wayfair. That's the principal case of what you're talking about. But here, you don't have that. Here, the guy's going to throw the vase off the roof, and you're going to catch it, and you just don't. Now, would that be similar to the case that Maimonides talked about where, let's say I steal a field from you, and then there's a big winter storm and it destroys all the crops. So you know what I tell you? Here's your field back. I don't owe you a penny, because that was going to happen anyway. So nothing in my action of stealing the field and forcing you off it contributed to the damage. Now, I'm wondering if human nature would be viewed the same way. I'm throwing the vase off the roof. Human nature could be that you just decide not to catch it or that you're clumsy. I would say in that case that I'm 100% liable and you're not.
Really? Now, you say that the gentleman who said he's going to catch the bait hasn't done anything, but hasn't he made an agreement? Isn't that doing something?
Yeah, he may have given an agreement. You're right, there may be something over there, but my problem is that there's no action. I don't have proof yet, but... And maybe I won't. I'm just inclined to say that damages require activity. And if there's no activity, then you can't point your finger at that guy who didn't catch it.
But in the case of the pit, there's no direct activity, yet he created the condition for the animal injury or animal death.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in terms of the pit, the guy did dig the pit at some point. That's why it's his pit. That's what the Torah says, that's put into his domain. Even though it's made in the public wayfair, nobody owns that. But if the guy digs a pit, the Torah views that as now his property, and he's liable now. So now if you got a hotel or an apartment building, and you got an elevator that's faulty, so that's definitely your property. And you're basically, I hear what you're saying, there's no action over there. But you're allowing people to go in knowing that it's a faulty elevator.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
I hate to even make this thing more complicated, but what if I throw the vase off and Doug says he's going to catch it and he just misses? Like, he thinks I'm going to throw it closer than I do, so he steps forward, misses the vase, but he's still not touched it.
Right.
Has he then performed an action because he was attempting, he was a part of the vase?
He didn't do any act in terms of the destruction of the vase.
He moved, just like moving a mattress.
Yeah, but where did he, Well, if you say that moving the mattress and then he moved away from catching it, then I could see that point. He did an action of... But if he just was passive, he just stood there and let the vase go right by his head without sticking his hands up to catch it, so then there's no action.
Okay.
This is an interesting, really interesting case because it seems like we could come up with infinite degrees of involvedness. What if, to take Jim's case, if what if we agree that I'll catch it and somebody else will throw it, but they throw it like 10 feet from me where it was impossible for me to catch.
Right.
You know? But if we define the responsibility in terms of actions, that I find that troubling because the lack of action that has been agreed to could result in many a business deal loss or, you know, whatever. I manufactured the product and you agreed to do the marketing, but you didn't do any marketing, so we lost all our money.
Right. There's a lot of variables. Let me see if I can find this case in the Rambam, in the Mishnah Torah. Let me just grab it. Hold on.
Okay.
Let's see. Now we're talking about... Okay, this is in his laws of damages, or injury and damages, the 7th chapter. This is in the Mishnah Torah.
Let's see. Hilkot Nizke Mamon?
No. Chovel Umazik.
Okay, got it.
And this is, it's chapter 7, law 7.
Got it.
Okay, so I'll read it out loud. The sound is okay for everybody?
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody who causes damage of money of his friend, he has to pay him back completely the amount that he destroyed from his best possessions, like any other damages. And even though he is not the damager that's the last one in the series of damages, since he caused, here it says first cause, but I think it means the primary cause. Again, let me read that again. Even though that this person who's acting, let's say it's me, I'm now damaging, all right? So even though, she'enohu mazik, zan nizik asma v'yachay, so I'm not... I'm wondering if there's a case. Yeah, give a case. What's the case? He says next. He says a guy throws a vessel that's his own from the top of a roof on top of pillows and cushions, and then somebody else comes along. So again, I'm throwing my own vessel off the top of the roof, and I'm throwing them onto some cushions. Let's say I'm packing up, and I live in a penthouse. So the way I'm going to pack is I'm just going to throw them all onto the pillows and I'll go downstairs and box them later. All right, nothing wrong with that. It's very expedient to do it that way. But then, so then Jim comes along and he removes the pillows from the ground. And then my vase smashes to the ground and it breaks. So then Jim has to pay me $100 because the vase cost $100. And it's like Jim broke it with his own hands. That he removed the pillows. This was a cause that the vase should break, and all similar cases. All right, straight case. It's my vase, I'm packing it, my stuff, I throw it off the roof. Jim comes along, moves all the pillows and cushions that I put on the ground. So he basically is the cause of the damage. So he has to pay me 100% for the breakage. Okay, so far so good?
Yeah.
Okay, next case is now law 8. A person throws a vessel of his friend off the roof. So I now take Cal's vessel. I go onto the roof, and I'm going to throw it on to some pillows that are on the ground. Right, now let me see if I'm reading this right. Okay, I throw vessels, so I'm throwing Cal's vessels from the top of the roof on top of the pillows and cushions that belong to Cal. So Cal has the cushions on the ground too. And then Cal comes along and removes all those pillows. So now I am obligated. The one who threw it is obligated because the throwing is the cause. It's the primary cause. He calls it the first cause of the breaking of the vessel. But if somebody else comes along, if Jim comes along in this case, so then both Jim and I obligated the Cal to pay.
Rabbi?
Yes.
If the first cause, that's throw of the vase, how come in the first instance I'm not liable for only half damage for moving the pillows?
Because it's yours. In the first case, what's the case? Are you talking about the case where it's my vessel that I'm throwing off the roof, or it's somebody, or it's Cal's?
It was your vase, and you threw it off, and I moved the pillows, and now I owe you.
Right. So now you owe me 100%.
How come it's not half? Because if throwing is the first cause, aren't you also causally involved?
Yeah, but it has to be that it's negligence. And if it's my vase, there's no such concept of me being negligent with my own property. I have the rights to destroy my property. There's no such law in the Torah about any penalty for me breaking my own money, breaking my own objects. I could do it.
That's true, but you're not rewarded for breaking your own property.
Yeah, but I can't come underneath the category of damaging when it's my own property.
Okay.
If that's the case, you're the only one involved who's under the category of damages. It is very interesting. I mean, I agree with you. It struck me too. But here I'm doing the same thing where typically I'd be, have to pay half in the next case where it's not mine. So why don't I just let you have to pay the same amount? Why is it that now it happens to be that I own the vase? Now, in this case, you owe 100%. You do the exact same act in the second case where I'm throwing off, Cal's vase. Now you only have to pay half. That's because you're the only one involved in the category of damages in the first case. Nobody else comes under the heading of doing a damage. So you are the sole damager in that case. The very same act. It all depends on ownership. There's a few variables that have to be viewed in terms of the case.
I see a little bit of an analogy. I realize the cases are not completely analogous, but in the case of the pit, if I dig the pit and somebody comes along with a goat, the goat falls in, okay, I owe for the goat. Somebody comes along with, five bulls, they all fall in and die. I owe for five bulls. I did the same act, but my monetary obligation turns out to be different.
Right, but we didn't answer your question yet either. In the case of the pit, you'd agree that you did an action. You dug the pit, right?
Right.
But in the case where you were lax in the elevator, you didn't repair the elevator. So what do we say? So that's what we're trying to locate now. If we have a case like that, Maimonides goes on in Law 9. He says, similarly also, if a person burns up the documents, it's like, the lottery ticket case, he's got to pay him. What was the amount that was the document had a claim on? Okay.
Wow. Read the last sentence of Halacha 9.
Yeah, let's see. Let me read the whole thing just for Jim and Cal. He says, also similarly, if a person burns up the documents of his friend, he has to pay him back all the claim, the entire amount of the claim that was written on the document, even though the actual physical document is not money, right? He says, and nonetheless, you still caused the loss of money. And this is provided that it was admitted by the one who burnt it, that the document was around. I mean, let's say I burn your wallet, but I think there's nothing in your wallet. And that's where your lottery ticket was. Okay, so that's what he says. The provision, sheyod lo hamazik, that the damager knew, he admitted, or he that the document was there, and there was a certain amount on the document, and because it was burning it, that now you can't claim your winning prize. But if I did not believe, meaning me, the one who burnt the wallet, I thought it was an empty wallet. So if I didn't believe, I don't have to pay you, except for the paper itself. Because there was no, in this case, he's trying to say, like, it's not going to be considered like a dollar bill. A dollar bill, we look at today as really being the document that's really the money itself. So, in the case of the lottery ticket, though, then I don't have to pay back anything if I did not believe that you had a ticket in there that was worth that much. But since you do own the property of the paper, that I'd have to pay you for. Okay.
I find it interesting that the halakha revolves, at least in one part, revolves around what a person believes.
Yeah, was he being negligent in his mind?
But you would think halakha wouldn't turn upon what's going on in someone's mind.
Yeah, interesting. You're right. Just start a clean, huh? You know, like, why is a document, for example, if I burned down your house and in it you had, you know, $1 million worth of furniture, I don't think it matters in that case your belief of the amount of value. I destroyed property that had that value. I had to pay $1 million. In this case, he's saying, Sheyodelo Hamazik Shishtar Mekayim. He has to admit that there's a document here that has that value to it. Meaning it's not, he's trying to say that it's not something which is typically accepted to exist. That there's a document that a person has a claim. For some reason, that's something which he has to have prior knowledge. Now what's the case here? It seems to be he's just burning the actual document. But you see, it says that provided that the damager knows that the document is existing and that there's a certain amount that's written on it. There, he has to have that knowledge. Because otherwise, you can't hold the person accountable for more than what the physical object is. And it seems to be just a case of where he's not burning a house down. He's just burning the document. That's what he says in the beginning. In the beginning of 9, a person who burns documents is not burning a house down, but he burns the documents per se. So when something has a value equivalent, that's not something we hold accountable to the person unless he's aware of it. We typically only hold the person accountable for what he sees with his eyes. So here's a leather couch. It's a $5,000 thing. I burn it. There, I got to pay $5,000. I see there's a couch there. If I burn paper, so all it is paper. What is the form? So the liability goes on the value of the physical object. But if there's an associated value external to the physical object, then the person has to know about it. That's what he's saying here. All right, still doesn't answer a question about the elevator case.
No, I guess it seems a little odd to me because if a person actually did that, it's hard to imagine he's going to come along and say, yes, I did believe he had a $12 million winning lottery ticket there, so I will agree that I owe him $12 million.
what the law is.
And in that case, the guy loses the $12 million?
That's right.
And that, I admit that outcome does not make sense to me.
Yeah. See, this goes back to what we were talking earlier, that the difference between, see, we said earlier that Meir is the one who says that you're liable even though if you're only causally involved. And Rav Shimon said you have to do an act of damage. So if I just throw a vase off the roof, that's not an act of damage, right?
Right.
I have to shatter it, or I have to take the vase and smack it on the ground or something. If you're just throwing it off the roof, it's heading towards the pillows. So somebody moves the pillows away, oh, that's why it broke. Well, Rav Shimon would say you're not liable because you did not do an act of damage. However, Rav Shimon says in this case, by the documents, that you are. Now, that's a big question because the document itself does not have the value, right? The document really tells you entitlement. Let's say it's a will. So I burn the will that you have that entitles you to $12 million. So you'd say on the surface that Rav Shimon would say I'm exempt because I didn't burn the money, right? If I took your money and burned it, fine. But the funny thing is, in this case, Rabbi Shimon says, yes, I am obligated. Even though he's the opinion that says that causative damages I'm not liable for. But in this case, he says, I'm liable. And the reason that he says that is because we have to understand our definition of what currency is. So I believe that the reason why, it's not that he's agreeing with causal damages in this one case, like Rabbi Meir. No, he sticks to his opinion. You have to do an act of damage. But he holds that what exactly is currency? Currency really is, by definition, is something which Rabbi Shimon says is a monetary equivalent. So he holds a dollar bill is no different than a will or a lottery ticket. In that case, Rabbi Shimon says that it's like I'm actually burning money in that case. Meaning I am doing an act of damage. We do define this document as having the same properties halachically as a dollar bill or a coin or whatever it is. He's not saying that it's causal. He's saying it is an exclusive act of damage. I am the sole cause. I did do an act of damage because he redefines a will and documents and all such things as real money, as if I burnt a wallet full of dollar bills. Okay? So there it's a redefining of what money is. That's why Rabbi Shimon says in that one case, that's not causative, because that really is money, the lottery ticket. So I just wanted to, you know, that was the one question we started with earlier.
Rabbi, is the Mishnah Torah the final halakhic word?
Well, I believe a person can, you know, follow Rambam. I mean, most of the Shulchan Aruch, is a final word. But most of it is based on the Mishnah Torah.
Okay.
Okay. Now, let's go further. How are we doing time-wise? Do you have a second class today or no?
Yeah,
we do.
You do? Oh. So what have we got? 12:15? Let me say a couple more minutes, right?
Okay.
Yep.
So let's see if we can find a case in here about your case. In Law 10, he says, similarly, if Reuben Noshe Beshila, I guess he... How do you have it in the beginning there, Doug? Law 10.
Similarly, a person is liable for causing a colleague financial loss in the following situation. Reuven was owed money by Shimon and sold the promissory note recording the debt to Levi. After he sold the note, he waived Shimon's obligation, freeing Shimon of responsibility, as will be explained in its place. Reuven becomes liable to pay Levi the entire amount mentioned in the promissory note, where he caused him to lose the money that he could have collected with the note. It is as if he destroyed it by fire. Similarly, if one of Reuven's heirs waived the debt, the prisoner waived the debt must make financial recompense for Levi's loss from the finest property in his possession.
So Reuven owes money to Shimon, is that the case?
No, yeah, Reuven was owed Shimon money.
And he sold the document to Levi. So Reuven owed it to Shimon?
That's what it says. Reuven was owed money by Shimon.
Oh, it was owed by. That means Shimon owed it to Reuven. So Shimon owed Reuven $100.
Right.
But then Reuven, he actually owed Levi. So Umachar Shtar Levi. So that means he says, listen, I got a promissory note. My friend Shimon owes me $100. And I'm going to now sell the promissory note to Levi. That's basically the case.
Yep.
And then afterwards, the chozer acher shemachru. Shemachru the Shimon. The chozer.
I assume it's that Reuven waived Shimon's obligation.
The Chaza, all right, good, good, very good. He retracted. He said, listen, Shimon, I'm waiving you on the debt that you owe me. So, Ray, Niftar Shimon, so he excluded, so Shimon was now exempt from paying back. Right, so Shimon now was let off the hook by Reuven. He doesn't have to pay him back. But now Reuven's got to pay back to Levi. Because I owed money to Levi, so I gave Levi this promissory note. I said, here, Reuven owes me $100, he's going to pay you now. So that's how I'm going to get off the hook by paying Levi. I'm basically giving him a promissory note. But then I let Shimon off the hook. So now the promissory note is worth nothing. Right? So I've got to now pay Levi, because I caused that promissory note to be deflated down to zero. So I caused Levi's loss. I've got to pay. Okay. No problem. Let me see if we can find a case. I think I'll have to look through it and see if we can find a case, because again, there are many cases. So let me do that. And do you want to continue with this next week? You want to go back to Kahelis? You tell me what you want to do.
Well, the original reason that we raised this was around this question of the guy who was writing papers for other people in college, and even though he wasn't technically doing anything illegal, he's enabling them to cheat. And we were trying to get to, okay, is he halakhically prohibited or is that okay? So I'm still curious to get back to the...
Yeah, that seems to me clearly to be prohibited, because we hold you like Reb Meir, and contributive damages is liable. So the simple answer is yes. That's a liability, and a person should not do that. It's also another law. It's dishonesty. You're not allowed to be dishonest, the Torah says.
Well, but if somebody comes to me and says, Doug, will you write me a paper about, how to fill a cavity, in a tooth, and I go research it and I write him an article and I charge him $200 for that. He turns around and submits it as his own for a class. Okay, now, let's say, number one, I knew he was going to do that and submit it in his own name, but all I did was write an article for him, and he paid me a fee.
Well, the Torah says you have to distance yourself from a falsehood. That means to say no connection at all.
Okay.
certainly if you know that he's going to use it to substantiate his claim of, you know, accurate dentistry knowledge, certainly, you know, that's putting people in harm's way. You can't do that.
But you would then, just to kind of clarify the line, you would have to have direct knowledge. Because I'm also thinking about, okay, gangster stops by for a latte at Starbucks. Starbucks knows the guy's a gangster. Okay? Do they refuse to serve him?
Right, we talked about that, because you're going to give him the energy to go out and kill.
Right. And then I can't recall, was our conclusion that they should?
See, in that case, I don't know if he's really doing anything, because a person could, you know, not eat a whole day and still have the energy to kill. So you're not really giving the energy to kill.
Okay. So there's some point in there at which you as a vendor stop being liable for what the person does with what you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
For example, if I sold a person an axe and he killed people with it, so then I'm actually equipping him. But giving the food is not the case, because it's not going to, you know, eliminate the possibility for the gangsters to, you know, to do, you know, heinous actions.
But in the case of the axe, you would have to know, right? Because certainly there's no prohibition against being a marketer of axes.
That's right. You'd have to know, of course.
Yeah. Okay.
So do you want me to prepare further for this, or you want to go back to Gallus? You tell me.
Yeah, I think we did. Jim, are you okay going back to Gallus, or you want to dig into this some more?
Well, I find this fascinating, but I find Gallus fascinating, so to me it's all good.
I am with Jim. It's all fascinating. I think on balance, I was leaning toward going back to Gallus.
I too.
Okay. All right, so we'll resume next week in Gallus then.
All right.
So maybe listen to the last class just so we'll get back into the area. We're in Chapter 7, I believe.
All right, Chapter 7. Okay.
All right, so the last class will be, you can look on the site and see what the last one we did. And I think I'll do the same thing. All right, so enjoy class, Rabbi Moskowitz. Give my regards, and have a very good week.
All right, you too. Thanks so much, Rabbi.
My pleasure.
Take care.
Okay, be well, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.